If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome back. This is Address Unknown, episode 12. We have been soaking in the sun and culture of Indonesia for about three-ish weeks. So let's get caught up.
For listening, this is Address Unknown, episode 12, and we are going to talk about our time over the past few weeks in Indonesia. First, we flew 4.5 hours from Perth into Denpasar Airport. We had a bit of a drive, which was about 2.5 hours from the airport to our hotel, which was located in the village of Taro. This is about 45 minutes north of Ubud, deep in the jungle.
Of Bali.
Correct.
The island of Bali.
The island of Bali.
Yeah.
I think we were both a little bit shocked, I would say, when we got there to make our way to the hotel. It was a little bit of a drive and a little bit chaotic on the roads.
It was very, we knew it would be very different than Australia, but having been there for almost 3 months, it was a little bit of a shock.
I don't think we took into consideration the amount of motorbikes, the level of sort of organized chaos, and total lack of traffic lights overall.
Yeah.
So it was sort of like a flow that was moving. That's like, as people went, it was just kind of everyone went at the same time, and it somehow worked its way through.
It did.
Mm-hmm. At any rate, the roads in Bali are also a little crazy because they are about the width of one single lane in the United States, mm-hmm. and then there's a dash line down the middle creating two lanes.
But not really two lanes.
No.
But our driver was very safe. He was good. I think he could sense that the lady in the back was a little bit nervous. The whole drive, the 2.5 hours, he kept asking us if we wanted to stop for anything, for a SIM card, for food, for all sorts of stuff. But really, I just wanted to get to our hotel. It obviously had been a very long day of travel, and I just wanted to get there before it got dark outside, because obviously there's no traffic lights, so there's not going to be any sort of street lights in these roads. I'm sure that he knew them like the back of his hand, but I just wanted to make it there in one piece. So we finally got to our hotel around 6. It was just starting to get dark, but obviously we were both getting hangry. We were thirsty. We were tired. I'm going to say thank God we had bought some duty-free spirits, because Bali, being a mostly like 99% Hindu country, there really is no alcohol unless you're in very touristy places. Our resort had beer, but that was really it. So that's some advice, I guess, if you're going to Bali.
Indonesia on the whole is hard
yes.
to get liquor in, for sure.
Yes.
And if you want liquor, it's expensive.
It's very expensive because the local people don't drink it. So they tax the shit out of it because they know that all the tourists are going to come. But anyway, our hotel was named Govinda Villas. There are like 5 freestanding rooms, kind of villas, huts, if you will. Very spacious, beautiful outdoor bathrooms. But because we are in the jungle, I was trying to prepare myself for the bugs and God knows what else we were sure to encounter. We've stayed in a room like this before, and I almost lost my eye to a scorpion.
You're immersed in nature.
Yes. I have a little PTSD, if you will, about staying in these sort of rooms in the jungle. The first thing that I noticed when we got into our room was that something had pooped on the ottoman in front of our bed. So I was like, what pray tell has left us a little treat, welcoming treat to our room?
That's right. And that something was a toke lizard that lived in the ceiling above our bed. And these things can get pretty large. At least a couple of times throughout the night, we were woken up by the toke. And the toke sounds a little something like this. We named him Teddy the Toke. So we had about 5 days at the villas. We had decided that we were going to take one day to basically relax, chill, and ease into our private pool here.
Yeah.
The Vanda Villas.
Uh-huh.
Because it was supposed to be monsoon season, meaning we would expect daily rains, there was only one other woman actually staying at the villa. So it was like three of us, 5 villas total, and no one around.
Yeah. It was lovely. We really did have private pool. And also, the interesting thing is that obviously we were in Australia during Australia summer. They said, come to Australia, it'll be sunny and beautiful. And it rained most of the time. In Indonesia, where it was supposed to be monsoon season, I will say for the most part, we experienced very little rain.
We had some very welcoming weather in Indonesia.
We did. We were happy about it.
Quite a change from the previous 3 months in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the following day, we hired a local guide to give us a tour, and we wanted to sort of familiarize ourselves with the place. We left our villa at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we headed to see the Twin Waterfalls. This is a very popular sort of 150-foot-high dual waterfalls coming down. It's very popular on the gram.
Yeah, cascades down into a beautiful pool. And yes, on the gram, you'll see influencers swimming through the pool up onto a rock in front of the two waterfalls.
But dude, it was a pretty decent hike to get there, so we were surprised. There was an influencer coming back.
Full face makeup.
Full outfit.
Oh my god.
Gold. It was like gold shimmering. Anyway, she was like, I will never do this walk again. And I was like, this is not a walk I would do with makeup on.
No, absolutely not. Like, it was hot. It was humid, and girlfriend was not dressed for a hike.
Yeah, and I can tell you, I do a lot of walks with makeup on. This is not what I would do.
Okay. So because of this is like one of those things about Bali, and this is not, Bali is incredible, it is beautiful, but it really is obviously one of these like Instagram places, right? And so we learned that our guide was very used to taking people out to make their gram videos for those people who fancy themselves influencers or just want to film, you know, that content. So he would not stop taking photos and videos of us, and I don't want videos of myself. Some photos of us are great, but it got to be a lot. But I will say though that his videos are the reason that I feel like I have made one decent TikTok in my entire life.
To his credit, yeah.
Yep. So we wandered around the falls. We made the long, steep, very hot hike back. Actually, really funny. Like, our guide couldn't hack it. So you could pay.
It was a dollar.
It was a dollar to get like a buck on a moped back.
We were hiking back, sweating bullets, and he comes flying by on the back seat of this moped, yeah, like laughing,
waving at us, because we were like, no, we can do it. Like, we're fine. Like, we should walk anyway. We're gonna be in this car all day. But my God, it was hot and it was not easy. So he was smart. But we did it. We made it. After this, we headed to what's called Heaven's Gate, which again is something that is all over the gram. But in doing some research, we learned that this place is not a gate to a temple, but is really just an entrance to a golf course. No, this is another thing I think that where the gram has skewed reality, if you will. And so everyone thinks in looking at this that this is a temple, but it's not. There's actually another one that looks like you're floating on water, but it's this trick that the photographers, these sites do where they mirror the sky to make it look like water, and it's not. So yeah, society is great. Don't believe everything you see on the Instagram.
So, trick photography.
Yeah. So anyway, got there. You had to pay a fee to get in. There was a line to take a photo at the golf club entrance gate. And so we were like, no, we're good. And we stressed that we really wanted to see the real Bali, right? To see real temples, learn about the real culture. And so after that, we headed to
Ulun Danu Deratan Temple.
Mark's much better at pronunciation than I am, so I'm just going to like cue him to do this so I don't slaughter the names of these beautiful places. But this is actually a very touristy spot, one of the most touristed places in Bali, but it absolutely is a must-see. It's one of the only public temples in Bali. It's huge. It's situated on a lake. Our guide, while being an amazing photographer, was super knowledgeable and was great at explaining to us all about the Hindu religion, its gods, what the temples are used for, what people do when they come there. And one thing that we asked him about, because we had noticed at our hotel and also everywhere we went, is that people create and place offerings every morning and also in the evening. And this could really just be some rice on a banana leaf, or you could add some flowers, some incense, some candy, sometimes a cigarette.
Yeah, they know. They were very, some were very elaborate.
Yeah.
And you were afraid to like walk on top of them. And they were on the ground. A lot of them are.
Yes.
Some were on dashboards of cars. Our guide told us if you get a new car, that the family will come with an offering and cover basically the 50% of the hood.
Yeah.
With flowers and incense and to pray for safe travels with the vehicle.
Yeah, you can place some kind of anywhere that you want, the entrance to your store, your house, in front of different statues of different gods that mean different things. But really, it's all for trying to bring in this good energy. Another really interesting thing about Bali, as I said just a second ago, is that this was one of the only public temples. And that is because in Bali, the families actually live in these temples. They're a part of their home. So not every family has a temple that they live in, but you're driving down the streets and you're driving by temple, 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 temple. And these are all people's homes. So then it's their job to care for and keep up the temple. And I'm really glad that we learned this, because when we were walking around the village where our hotel was the day before, Farber almost walked right into an open door of what we thought was just a public temple, but would have been someone's private home.
Yeah, I thought it was an open door policy. And the reason I say that is because there is no door. There's two, they call them gates. Think of them as like an opening, a very ornate opening you walk under.
Mm-hmm.
You walk through. I thought, like a lot of Southeast Asian countries, you can walk around them and explore them. But this mm-hmm. is not true. It was really like, it's like a family compound.
Yeah.
You would have been
the white tourist just barging into someone's home.
Yeah.
It would have been real awkward.
Yeah.
So learn that. Thank God. Don't just barge into a temple in Bali.
After visiting the temple on the water, our guide asked if we want to stop for lunch. And we're like, yeah, absolutely. We really want to stop somewhere authentic.
You've been really wanting some of this.
Yes, yes. So when I get into a city, I see all the restaurant signs. I always want to know what they are. So I asked the guide, like, what is this? What is that? What does that word mean? And so he's like, oh, we're going to bring you to Babi Guling. And Babi Guling is not the name of a restaurant, but it is a local favorite dish. And it's basically suckling
mm-hmm.
on rice. It's all parts of the pig in
yeah.
this particular case. It is not only the crispy skin, which we all like, but it's the intestines, which were deep fried in this case.
I didn't eat those.
It's knuckles. It's like, and also stuff that's stewed into a soup. It's great.
It was really good. It was very spicy. There was like an amazing soup, knuckle soup, but the broth was incredibly spicy. Yeah, and there were skewers. There were almost like pork meatballs.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was very good. And you could tell it was like a very authentic local place.
So after lunch, he ended up bringing us to this museum. It was called the Ogo Ogo Bali Museum. And this was not on the itinerary. We had not seen any sort of like promotional photos for this place.
Mm-mm.
It should be on everybody's list. If you're going to Bali, asked to see if an Ogo Ogo a museum or experience. I don't know how many of them exist besides this one. I think this is the only one.
No clue.
But this is a tradition for the Hindu New Year, which is in March. What happens is villages will make these huge statues out of paper mache, plaster, and then like...
hair, yeah. Like feathers, like
ornate, really
everything, huge. Super detailed, beautiful.
And they're structured by like rebar. They're heavy. They take several people to hold. They're about 15 to 20 feet tall.
They're massive.
These are usually made to represent bad energy that they want to get rid of for the year. So these are like frightening horror movie stuff and nightmares.
Yeah, it's literally you walk in and you're like, holy shit, like you could film a horror movie. You walk in, you turn on your flashlight, and everything looks like it wants to kill you. There's decapitated heads, monsters, teeth,
odors.
Things with three heads, yeah. Like anything you can think of, but very beautiful and very unique and obviously made for a really cool purpose.
Yeah, we'll put them on the website. Or
Yeah.
But in this case, the museum, we're really lucky because at the end of the New Year, what they traditionally do is they burn these effigies.
Yeah, the end of the festival.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this museum decided they were going to save some of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they have about 20 of them throughout. And right down the road from this museum, there was another temple that we got to visit.
Mm-mm.
And this was the Pura Taman Ayun, which is where the former king of Bali lived. Bali was the only island that ruled by a king and was not colonized by the Dutch or by the British. So that kind of adds to its mystique.
Yeah, and it's the only island that is like almost 100% Hindu as well. Because
most of it's Muslim.
The rest of Indonesia is mostly Muslim.
So after seeing the temples and going to the Ogo Ogo Museum, eating all portions of the pig... we got back in the car and headed back to the Govinda Villas, where we arrived about 3:30 in the afternoon. It was a long day. We did see a lot.
We saw a ton. It was great. It was a really amazing tour. Highly recommend.
On our last day, we got a ride into Ubud. This is a pretty popular town in Bali. This is where most of the backpackers tend to land.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the jungle. They either go to Ubud or they go to Seminyak or Kuta, which are beach towns. But it's nice because it offers restaurants, coffee shops, or Western-style hotels, hostels. We got a ride in just for the day so we could have a chance to check out their art market. We bought a mask that reminded us of the Ogo Ogo Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the downtown Ubud, there's sort of an influencer playground, we'll call it, or the rice fields, which are now...
let's use air quotes when we say these rice fields.
So Ubud is also famous for these, there are tiered rice fields.
Mm-hmm.
So think of an Italian wine vineyard or something where it's like on a hill. The same concept relates here to how rices grow in Ubud. So they are not a flat rice paddy field like you think of when you think of Southeast Asia. They're these like beautiful terraced hills. And now, because they've found you can get more money by inviting influencers and tourists into the fields than growing the rice, they just grow the rice for visuals. And you can pay to walk through the terraces now. But you can also swing on the terraces or through the terraces.
Over the terrace, very high up in the air. So many swings. They make it seem like, oh, there's this one place where you can have, but this like literally like bush gardens of swings over rice terraces. And you see the people, the women with their long flowing dresses as they get pushed over. Ugh.
It's beautiful, but it's a little disappointing, I think, the reality once you get there, because you're like, rice is grown all over the country of Indonesia as well as other Southeast Asian countries. It can be harvested twice a year. It doesn't require someone to swing over it
no.
to make it money. But I think they found that that makes a lot more money.
For sure. For sure. They're so beautiful. And yeah, it's such hard work. And these people are just literally bent over all day long, either planting or harvesting the rice. And yes, there are rice fields everywhere. There are terraced rice fields up in the hills, in the mountain, by the waterfall that we went to. There's areas where it's more flat, but yeah, there's rice fields everywhere. It really is a beautiful island. So coming back to Teddy, the Tokay, I alluded to the fact that obviously I knew that there would be other things that we would have to deal with while staying in the jungle. So some of those things are that we had two wasps' nests being built on the ceiling of our room. And these aren't wasps like you think of in the States. These things are massive. I mean, they had to be, what, 2-3 inches long?
That's an overstatement.
That is nuts.
3 inches?
Oh my, if you count like the body and the feet and everything, they are huge. Okay. They're terrifying.
Sure, I'm going to say 1.5 inches maximum. They're bigger than wasps in the US. They're frightening.
Yeah.
I can deny it, but they're not the size of
the
okay
same. Well, I don't know. The females are smaller, but the males are very big.
Okay.
Anyway, luckily we had a mosquito net around our bed to keep them away from us as we slept. The net also came in really handy one night when a bat got into our room through the open air bathroom. So this is a fun story I'd like to talk about a little bit. Mark was already in bed, and I was in the next room watching Below Deck, because what else do you watch? And you saw the bat actually come into the room, fly into the room, and you decided that you were just not going to say anything.
That's correct.
So what went through your mind? Why would you not alert me to the fact that a bat was in the room?
I thought you would be so focused on Captain Lee, you wouldn't even notice this black flying animal come through. And I thought it would get out by the time you noticed it. Honestly, I thought, it's lost in the room. It'll figure its way out. Don't say anything. Oh my gosh, the bat was in our room for like 10 minutes.
Oh my God. So I'm sitting there watching, and all of a sudden the bat, probably 2 seconds after you have this thought not to tell me, comes into the room where I'm in, and I just scream, "Bat!" And I run and jump underneath the mosquito net. And it took a while. It took a while to get the bat out. The bat was going crazy. We were scared. The bat was scared. At one point, I tried to get it to go out into the bathroom, and it flew in my face, and I screamed murder. People probably thought you were murdering me in the jungle. Eventually, we got it to go out, but I don't know. I'm still a little pissed that you didn't give me fair warning that there was a bat in the freaking room.
I think the irony or the concern we both had, honestly speaking, is that before we left for this trip, we went and got so many vaccinations.
So many
shots, like 9 shots or something. And the only vaccination we passed on was for rabies because we thought it was too expensive.
It was so expensive.
And we figured we're not going to pet wild dogs. What else would bite you?
Oh, then a bat comes in the room.
A bat mite.
Oh, there you go.
Safe and
but
sound.
But don't tell Jonica. Just hopefully she won't see it.
Safe and sound, you bird that night.
Oh, my God. Anyway, after a week in the jungle, I was ready to move on to something more secure and maybe a little less remote. We loved our stay. The villa was incredible. The family that ran the temple, owned the temple, was so lovely. They gave us a ton of fruit. They were more than willing to like talk to us and explain to us about their family and the temple. It was great, and I'm really happy that we got to experience this area of Bali away from the super touristy spots. It was a nice kind of way to ease in to a new country, Indonesia. It was time for us to move on to our next destination, the island of Lombok.
So before we get into our adventures in Lombok, we will take a quick break and be right back.
Okay, this is Address Unknown, episode 12, Indonesia edition, and we are on our way to Lombok. So from Taro, where we were staying, it was about a 2-hour drive to the port, and we had decided to take the slower, cheaper local ferry because the fast ferries only left 2 times a day. You never know what traffic's going to be like. And also we read a bunch of different blogs, and they said that it can take almost just as long as the slow boat, depending on the weather. So We got to the boat around 10 o'clock, and the boat left the dock around 11:30, so not too bad. What they do is these ferries are huge. They drive trucks onto them, scooters, all of these things, and they wait until the boat fills up. And so you want to get there early, because if you don't, you might not get a seat. So we got seats. That was great. Some people had to sit on the floor. There are vendors that come on the boat prior to departure selling fruit, snacks, water, coffee, because it is at least a 4-hour journey. So you're going to need some stuff. On this boat, the locals were eating a lot of durian fruit. Now, if you are unfamiliar with this fruit, it is about the size of a cantaloupe. And when it is cut open, the fruit is white and has almost like this custard-like texture. It's super messy, goopy. And you just kind of, you don't have to, but most people just go in with their hands and scoop it out and put it in their mouth. And so I don't want to insult anyone, but this fruit stinks. It stinks.
Most people, I mean, anybody who's heard of this fruit knows it's like notoriously bad smelling.
Yeah.
And so in a lot of places, you can't eat it.
No, like there's signs.
Yeah, there's signs in all the hotels and on metro trains and on buses and stuff and airplanes and airports. You cannot open
it. You can't eat durian. So everyone knows that it's fairly offensive, but not on the local ferry from Bali to Lombok.
No, not on a boat that costs $4.50 for 4 hours.
No. So we weren't seated very close to the bathrooms, but it kept smelling super strongly like urinal cakes all around us. And I finally realized that it was the durian. And that's all I can say is that it smells like urinal cakes. And I don't know why you would want to put something like that in your mouth. But you like it.
Yeah, at first it's like there's a urinal cake similar smell to it, like taste. Mm. And then it's sweet. It's either, you know, it's like Vegemite or Marmite. It's like you either like it or you don't flavor it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you acquire over time.
Yeah, so you'll eat it, but you know that if you do, there's no action happening between us until you brush your teeth and use some mouthwash, because no, absolutely not. Real gross. Anyway, after a stinky yet smooth ferry ride, we arrived in Lombok. We got a pickup from our hotel because it was about an hour and a half drive to our resort, Batatu Villas. We got there, and again, I think because it was a low season and we were staying for about a week, they gave us a complimentary upgrade, which was lovely. And the room was freaking incredible. There was an open air indoor outdoor area with a private plunge pool. We had a kitchen, we had a sunken living room, and inside the room was stunning. We had a huge open air bathroom with a door that was much more secure than Govinda's.
No bats coming to this one.
And the style was super modern, wood and concrete, and this place was only $40 a night. Now, again, it was the low season, so during the high season, you were told by the staff, right, that these rooms go for more than 4 times that a night, so it is much more expensive, but again, very affordable, because they were incredible. Staff is super lovely. They're very attentive. They have an amazing food menu that's super extensive with drinks. Could not say enough good things about this place. Unlike Bali, Lombok is about half Hindu and half Muslim. They do say that there's some Christians sprinkled in there somewhere. And because this was our first time in a Muslim country, it was our first time hearing the call to prayer. We were staying in Kuta, which I'll say people go there to surf, right? Like, it's kind of a surfer town.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the roads in Lombok were much better than Bali. They were smooth. They were paved. They were for real 2 lanes. And there was way less traffic. So the whole time that we were in Lombok, we rented a scooter from our hotel to be able to get around and explore. And so while we were there, you took surf lessons. You like to say that you're a surfer now, but you're learning. You're learning to surf.
Basically, the boat is Zephyr.
Oh, God.
Going back to a couple episodes from Australia. basically.
Riding
that night black
board
into Bells.
Oh my God, I think that you're dreaming, you're learning. I saw you get up a few times. Anyway, you took some surf lessons. We visited a bunch of different beaches, beautiful beaches. We went to a beach club, which was super fun. We did a lot of yoga and just kind of had a chill time overall.
Yeah, Lombok was relaxing and enjoyable and not chaotic. As Jonica mentioned, because the roads were much better, I felt safer driving on them on a motorbike. I did not in Bali at all. I thought that was just chaos. There was so many people with the tourist tattoo. The tourist tattoo, if you don't know, is on your inner right calf, and it's from the exhaust pipe on a scooter.
Mm-hmm.
And many people have them because they're not used to driving them that often.
Well, they get on and off the wrong side.
Yes.
And that's where the exhaust pipe is.
There was a lot of tourists that had some, like, bandages. Ooh,
I mean, like, road rash. Lots of road rash. Like, there were, and we were asking, obviously, people, and they're like, oh, yeah, you go to the hospital in Bali, and it's just chock full of white people who have crash their scooters.
We're very fortunate to have some previous experience driving, not have to run into that problem.
No.
So we had our time in Lombok, and we are now preparing to head to our next destination, which is going to be the town of Manado on the island of Sulawesi. Sulawesi is another island far from Lombok, but we were interested in visiting another island outside of the typical places that you would go to in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
Sulawesi is known for its incredible scuba diving and sort of remoteness,
which
was attractive to us.
Much less touristy than the two places that we had been.
So we booked our flight to go from Lombok. We were going to have to stop in Java and then get up to Sulawesi. No big deal. We knew we'd have a flight or a day of travel ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
About 48 hours before departure, we got an email that our flight had been changed. Our first leg of the flight was the same.
Mm-hmm.
Our second leg of the flight was now rescheduled to occur before the first leg departed.
Yep.
Simply not possible.
I don't know who works at Lion Air, but that's not a thing. You can't leave the second place before you've even left the first place. So, and you couldn't change the first flight. That was the other crazy thing. So you go on, I'm like, all right, well, maybe we'll just like change the flights and figure this out. No. You could only change the flight that had been rescheduled, which was the second flight, and there was no option to change it to a different time.
So Jonica quickly gets on the case, gets on Lion Air's website, cancels that flight, then immediately rebooks for 2 days later.
Mm-hmm.
This was our first learning lesson here on how to deal with a budget airline in Indonesia.
And I will say that we've flown budget airlines, though, like on this trip quite a bit. This has been our first and second, you're getting to that, negative experience. So our word of advice, do not fly Lion Air.
The reason for that is because on that second flight that Jonica had booked for us, 2 days later, we got another notice 24 hours before the flight. That flight was now canceled. We dropped our plans for the day and immediately got to work, figuring out where we were going next since we had a week before our reservation in Jakarta.
Yeah, and let's be real. We lost a good amount of money because of this, right? We had two flights that we had to cancel that we've put in refunds for. Who knows if those will get refunded? They've said it'll take at least 60 days because we're using an international bank. And our hotel in Manado had already been paid for. And obviously, we let them know that, hey, we're going to be coming 2 days later. So we were already into our reservation time by the time we realized that we wouldn't be able to go there. So we lost some coin on this thing. But that's what happens when you're traveling. And this has kind of been our first bump in the road, I will say, when it comes to these sort of things.
Yeah, it was almost inevitable. And you can't fly into a town without a hotel reservation and then expect to find something that night all the time. We don't live like that.
No, and this place was very small too. There was not a lot of resorts, and so there wasn't a lot of options. And I think even when we looked, it was like, you don't know if these places are lying, but it's like, oh, we only have one room, and you're flying to a very remote place. And so you don't necessarily want to show up and try to find a place for a week on a very remote island in the middle of nowhere, far away from anything else in Indonesia.
Right. We learned. Hard lesson. So we realized we need to make our way back west towards Jakarta, which was going to be our next stop.
Mm-hmm.
Taking this into consideration, we decided to look into a small island off of Bali called Nusa Lembongan. But to get there, we need to take another ferry. Unlike the boat to Lombok, the slow boat, which is occupied by locals, which was extremely affordable and was super slow, we chose a fast boat, in quotes here, fast boat, in exchange, which turned out to be a nightmare.
This boat was a legit 3-hour-long nightmare. We got on, and the air con was not working. There was a strong smell of gasoline. And as we made our way towards Nusa, it started raining. And so the ocean got more and more angry. We were slamming into waves. At one point, we hit a wave wrong, and it felt like we were going to tip over. And water came crashing, rushing into the boat. The woman in front of me was crying. I almost started crying. I felt sick. This boat was full of terrified backpackers and could not wait for this ride to be over. Never again. So just a word of warning. If you're going to take the fast boat from Bali to Lombok or back again, it sounds like that's kind of the experience every single time because these boats aren't big. It's 70 kilometers from Lombok to Nusa, and you're just in the open ocean, so she's going to be rough.
Yeah, I mean, we boarded the boat, and at no time was there a safety meeting as to where there are life jackets.
We don't even know if there were life vests. We have no idea.
It was so sketchy, and I hope my mom's not listening. This was not a boat I would take again for my own safety. I was planning for the exit, like how to grab our stuff, not our bags, just the important passports and things like that.
Yeah.
Jump out the window.
You think I didn't notice that you put your fanny pack, you strapped it tight, and you think I didn't notice it while you're trying to tell me, calm down, dear, just breathe. But I'm like, no, this dude's freaking out too. Well, inside you weren't. No one was. And every single person in that boat was thinking about how numero uno was going to get out.
Yeah.
And it was going to be like, some people are going to die, but I'm going to try to make it through. Like, that's what we were all thinking.
There was just like scenes from the Titanic that coming through my head.
Oh my God.
But, okay, aside from the safety issues, we did make our way to Nusa Lembongan,
which was beautiful.
Really happy we got to this island. We were really lucky to actually have sort of fallen upon it and not planned, because it's far less busy than both Lombok and Bali.
Mm-hmm.
There was certainly less cars. There were zero to no influencers. And overall, this is a more authentic Indonesian-style island.
Mm-hmm.
We checked into our bungalow and planned for the next few days as to what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Geographically speaking, there are some really wonderful phenomena on Lombongan. One in particular is the Devil's Tears. We did this on our first day. It's a cove on the west side of the island where the waves come crashing in from the ocean against these cliffs. And through time and erosion, the cliff face has now become sort of concave. So when the waves hit against the land, they blow back into the ocean, making this like groveling echo sound.
And this mist that comes off, and those are the devil's tears. And I also think too, they call it that because it's like, it is beautiful. Like the water is crystal clear and stunning. And you're like, wouldn't it be fun to jump in? And that's like the perfect place to swim. But no, you jump in there, you dead.
Dangerous.
You dead.
Danger.
You up against the rocks, dead.
After spending some time at Devil's Tears, we got back on the motorbike and we drove on the single lane rickety yellow bridge, it's called, to Chenangan Island, which is right next to Nusa. It's very small. And from there, we end up going to the Cliff Club. This is a boutique hotel beach club on the Blue Lagoon. Overlook cliff drop off right below you, pristine crystal clear waters, just beautiful.
Oh my God, stunning. Another place that you're like, I would love to swim there, but no, another place you would die if you went swimming there. But there were turtles in there, huge fish, and the Cliff Club, Thai beef salad, one of the best things I've ever eaten.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had an amazing meal there. Mm-hmm. Fresh, it was like a nice departure from some of the like routine Indonesian rice dishes that we'd had.
Mm-hmm.
So good, that beef salad, Janica made me go twice. We drove to this island twice for this meal.
It's true. I think, you know, Indonesian food is amazing, but there are a lot of dishes that have noodles. So there are a lot of things that I can't eat. So let's just say that I had the same dish multiple times, sometimes multiple times in one day. Nasi goreng.
Get that nasi goreng every breakfast, every single day.
So much nasi goreng, which is very good. And I know I'm going to miss nasi goreng with my sambal. It's in my prawn chips. Like, I'm going to miss it. But I was needing some variety in my life.
Overall, I would say the sunsets, the yoga classes, and the calm vibe of Nusa were really, really beautiful. And we were fortunate enough to have this unplanned experience by default of multiple plane cancellations and flight rescheduling.
Yep.
But island life has to come to an end at some time. Either the money will run out or the suntan just gets too intense. But before we get into our last stop in Indonesia, let's take a quick break.
All right, we are back. We had experienced the beauty of the beaches in parts of Indonesia, and so we wanted to get a taste of the city life. And so we headed to Jakarta for a few days. To put this into perspective, Jakarta has a population of about 11 million people. New York City has a population of almost 8.5 million. And Jakarta is smaller than New York City. So she's crowded. Our taxi from the airport was like Mario Kart. We were in and out of lanes. We were on the shoulder. We were barely missing cars. And once we got into the city, then all of a sudden there's all the scooters. It was insane. It's one of the more insane taxi rides that I've ever had in my life. But hey, he got us there really fast and it was really cheap. We were staying in the Menteng neighborhood, right in the city center, which was a great jumping off point for us. Our first full day, Mark had booked us a tour to see the major points of the city, get some education, and lay of the land. GP, our tour guide, was an older Indonesian man. He was probably about at least 70 years old. We stopped, but lovely, a lovely man. We stopped at a school where Barack Obama had went for a couple years. Indonesian people love Barack Obama, and they are very proud to say that he went to school there. He has visited there a number of times, and we were very excited, obviously, that they love Barack so much, because we love Barack so much.
Bring him back.
Bring Michelle back. Bring anyone else back. We saw embassies and government buildings, and then went to the National Monument. This thing is huge. You can see it from all over the city. It's 132 meters high, which is 433 feet. And it is an obelisk, and it's in the center of Jakarta. It was built to commemorate the struggle of the Indonesian people and celebrate its independence. So therefore, it's topped with this huge gold flame. In the base of the monument, there is a diorama history of Indonesia, because this country has been through it. They were colonized by the Dutch, then taken over by the Japanese for a number of years, back to the Dutch, before finally gaining their independence in only 1949. Outside of the monument, there were these huge groups of school children visiting, and all they freaked out when they saw us and wanted to take pictures with us. They wanted to talk to us. They wanted to shake your hands. They were giving you high fives. It was crazy. This went on and on and on. Like, finally our guide kind of had to step in and be like, all right, guys, we have to get going.
I think that in the touristed towns, the kids are used to seeing, you know, the guy with a surfboard Jakarta is not a tourist town, it's a capital. So these children, these school children, were probably from like cities or towns outside of Jakarta.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not used to it. Yeah. And they were just like, they'd come by and like yell and they'd be like, hey, hello. And like, what's your name? And how old are you? And then they'd run away.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd like want a high five and then they'd run away. And they were all kind of like embarrassed and laughing and then they'd come back. So yeah.
It was very sweet. And this happened to us a number of times. And it wasn't even just children. Like, adults would come up and want pictures with us. It was a very weird feeling. I guess, like, I didn't think that these sort of things happened anymore in the world. But it was very sweet. Was not expecting it. Our next stop after the National Monument was, I think you agree, was the best of the day. We got to see the biggest mosque in Southeast Asia because Jakarta is like 85 to 90% Muslim. So usually you're not allowed, I think in a lot of places, to go inside the mosque if you are not Muslim, but this mosque, they let you. Mark got to wear a sarong and a kopiah, which is the traditional hat that Muslim men wear in Java. There's a couple different names, but that's what it's called in Java. I was given a robe with a hood in order to obviously just cover me up. The mosque was stunning. It was massive. And our tour guide was great. He explained in detail the design of the mosque and details about the Muslim religion. And the thing that I love so much about the Indonesian country is that anyone you talk to talks about the love and respect that they have for every religion of the people of Indonesia. Because obviously there's a lot of different religions. I mean, not as many as the U.S. or other places, but they are so open and accepting and have respect for everyone. And you truly see and feel that across the street. From the mosque is a Catholic church that we went to, and the mosque was actually built right across the street from the church on purpose to show the unity between the Christians and the Muslims. So that was just, I don't know, you hear that over and over again by a lot of people that you talk to in Indonesia, and it's truly heartwarming, especially in the world that we live in today. We then went to Chinatown. We went to the old town. We met this man who was making these super intricate traditional Indonesian puppets, which unfortunately seems to be a dying art, and finished at the port. It was a super long day, but we learned and saw a ton. And for that, I am grateful.
We'd never been in a mosque.
No.
I didn't think you could go in them. We'd never seen traditional Indonesian puppetry, like shadow puppetry,
mm-hmm.
and learn the actual
what goes into making them.
How to make them by hand.
Mm-hmm.
Great tour.
Yep.
Overall, the next morning we took it easy after that 10-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
We focused on planning for the future, looking for things to do on our next trip, and withheld from eating too much because we had a street food tasting tour booked that evening. The moment we introduced ourselves to Amir, the sky sort of closed in, got a little dark, and monsoon rains, for the first time that we've really experienced them in Indonesia, just, like, came crashing down. So we sat in a coffee shop with Amir, chatted with him for the next hour and a half, got to know each other before we made our way to visit some local markets. So we stopped at some food stalls, we stopped at some street vendors. It was a great, albeit difficult, time for Jonica to find any gluten-free options. But we had a good time overall, I'd say. Emir, our guide, was really well-educated, fluent in English, and understood Western culture more than many of the younger demographic that we met thus far in Indonesia. We'd be asked, where did you learn English? Did you learn at school? Where, from listening to, like, music, what is it? And he said that he actually had an affinity for Star Wars movies and started watching them repeatedly when he was a kid, like with and then without subtitles, and then for like kind of teaching himself English. After trying all of these street market foods on a stick, noodles of various kinds, Emir led us to Camden, which is a local bar in our neighborhood where we were staying. As soon as we walked into Camden, like the doors open and this plume of cigarette smoke comes bellowing out. It was like a bar from the 90s.
Well, and just to clarify, like, Indonesians be smoking, right? Like, everywhere. They don't drink. Well, they do in Jakarta. But they don't drink, so they smoke. So, like, we haven't experienced people smoking like that in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, we had to take a shower as soon as we got home.
Yeah, I mean, every restaurant that we went to would be like, do you want to sit in the smoking section or the non-smoking section? And we're like, I'm sorry, what? And that's the thing. And honestly, the smoking sections were usually nicer than the non-smoking sections. And they would be full of people. And the non-smoking sections would have, like, us and maybe another couple.
But listen, it was a good night. The bar was cool. Live music. Lots of young Indonesian people having drinks. You know, these were... What did he say? Our guide said, Muslim by day, not by night.
Yeah.
So they're drinking and smoking at night. But all said, we had a great time. At the end of the night, we said goodbye to Amir, and we headed back for our sort of last day in Jakarta.
Yeah. It was a long day. It was a long night. And so in one of the first episodes, I mentioned that I was nervous to travel, and especially to certain countries, because I have SIBO, which is kind of like IBS. I have a very sensitive stomach. So I wanted to quickly give an update on how I'm doing. And I will say, until we got to Jakarta, I was doing great. I should say that we are both doing great. Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. Of course, I'm not 100% all of the time. Like, you know, that things pop up. But for the most part, it's been very manageable. Throughout Bali, throughout Lombok, it's been great. But Jakarta got us both. I think we are finally feeling better, but it has been about 6 to 7 days of us both not doing great. We're not sure exactly what it was, but on the street food tour, like Mark said, we only ate a couple of the same things because I couldn't eat 90% of the food. And so one of the things being, I'm going to put my money on the fruit that we had. We had this fruit with very spicy peanut sauce, which was very good. But I have my theory that the fruit was washed in local water, which you're not supposed to drink. And so let's just say that we have taken a lot of Imodium since that tour.
Yeah, I think that's going to do it for our time. And in Indonesia, we've depleted the emergency diarrhea kit. So we've replenished it with new Imodium from the pharmacy because we used everything that the doctors from the U.S. gave us.
Yeah.
But we're feeling better.
Yeah, yeah.
So with that, before we get into our love and our learns here, we are going to take a clean, quick break.
All right, Farber, what is your love of Indonesia?
So I think that our chance to explore a large area was missed because of the flight debacle. So I really think we didn't get a chance to see everything that the country has to offer, which you really can't do in 30 days. We saw some great places on this trip, but they were all within like about 500 square miles. They were not far from one another. We saw countless beaches. We got to go to several different types of religious centers, mm-hmm. cultural places. But because the country is like so large and vast in islands, it's really difficult to get to see everything. It's extremely ethnically different. It is Muslim, it is Hindu, it is Buddhist, it is Christian, and then some potentially more that we just don't know about in some far-off islands. But at any rate, I think for the purpose of this conversation, the fruits were my love. I got to try fruits that some I'd not had before, many I had.
Mm-hmm.
I think the jungle was really great here. And really the simplicity and the pace of the people in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. This really was my that's my love.
You got to try one fruit that you had never had before. Neither of us had nor seen before.
Salak. They call it snake fruit.
Snake fruit.
Really good. Just don't eat too much because you won't be able to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you kind of wish that was the case now, don't you?
You have the opposite problem right now.
Okay.
It's balance. It's all about balance here.
All right, and what is your learn?
My learn is that most people who are going to visit Indonesia go to Bali. Many people don't know that it's an island of Indonesia. They even think that it's like its own country.
Yeah, they think Bali is just Bali. That it's the country of Bali.
The locals who, every time we like got into a cab or like we're talking about trying to go somewhere, they were like, are you going to Bali? Coming from Bali? So they really just like sort of direct you to or from Bali as though it's the only place.
I think they just know that that's just where tourists go.
And yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. It is certainly, like we talked about, it's a beautiful, unique island.
It's amazing. Than the rest of the country. A must-see.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's not the only island. It's not the only place in the country. So the reason I feel this it is the most popular, though, is because it's also the most accommodating. Of all the places we visited, it was, like, the easiest, transportation-wise. It was the easiest to, like, if you wanted something different than Indonesian food, you could do it there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In comparison, we had spent our past few days here in Jakarta, which is the nation's capital, where we discovered it's far less interested in courting tourists. It was very difficult to get from A to B. It's very difficult to figure out how to get around the trains and the buses. So I think it takes a little bit of a challenge, but if you sort of seek out, even like a capital city can be a little bit challenging, but still very, very interesting.
You can do it.
Yeah, and worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
That is my learn. All right, my dear. What is your love?
The people of Indonesia are incredible. They are so kind. They are so happy that you are in their country. And they are so excited to answer your questions, to tell you about their religion, the culture, the food. Even if they cannot speak English, they will get out their phones and use Google Translate to communicate and help you. The children are super excited and curious to see you. They want to talk to you, to know where you're from. And for the most part, I said this earlier, people have really strong faith in Indonesia. Depending on the, it doesn't matter what their religion is, they are very religious people, but they are so open and accepting of all of the differences and all of the other different religions that there are within their country.
Yeah, I mean, not to take part of your love here, but the fact that it's majority Muslim does not follow the stereotype that the Western world has of Muslims.
No.
It's very, very much the opposite.
Yeah.
They were extremely inclusive of other faiths.
Yeah. You think, I mean, in my mind, I was like, well, there must be like Muslim schools and Hindu schools and Christian schools. And of course, there are. Like, there are definitely, I think for the most part, it's like Catholic schools are the ones that are probably the most discriminatory. You had Hindu kids, you had Chinese kids. They all are going to the same school. And I thought in my mind that it would be much more segregated, but it's not at all, which is very lovely to see.
Yeah, it's a good love.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your learn?
It's a love and learn in a way that there are still places in the world that have not been totally taken over by Western culture and are still not touristed by a lot of people. Jakarta being such a massive city, I guess I just assumed that it would be much more Westernized, but it truly is not. And it's been a refreshing experience to see this, because I just assumed that the world had shrunk so much that everything everywhere would be in English, that no one would be surprised to see white people, let alone Americans. So it's nice to know that there are still places in the world that are yet to really be touristed, discovered, and explored, and that still take a bit more work if you are not a local and you want to get into the real.
And there it is. All right. That is going to do it for us for episode 12 of Address Unknown. That is all the time for our visit to Indonesia. We didn't make it to every place that we wanted to go, but that's going to happen. In the end, we left feeling there is more to discover, a reason to return, which is how you want to leave any place, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we invite our listeners to email us with questions, DM us on Instagram, or simply pass along, suggest, share the podcast with friends you think they might enjoy it. All right, that's going to do it for us.
Bye.